It's time to bring together the roundtable on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura on a Reaction Monday on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We have assembled the roundtable. It's brought to you by Sam and Dave's in downtown Rocky River, celebrating the 20th annual main event. Lobster celebration.
And it is good.
It is really good.
Crazy.
This is a famous main event lobster celebration going on now through Thanksgiving. You stop in on Sunday, get $15 off a delicious New England lobster bake. We've sampled that right here in the studio. Sam and Dave's is open every Sunday, 1 p.m. You got to make reservations now. And again, it was voted West Side's best seafood restaurant and best happy hour by West Shore Magazine. And remember about late night happy hour every Friday night with half price food off the entire bar menu. It's a perfect place to stop by after watching high school football or to talk about professional football, which is what we do here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We welcome in Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network and welcome in Tom Withers from the Associated Press. Doug, I thought the call, the moment of truth, that interception, and hearing that back on the broadcast, you captured that emotion about as well as anyone could. Obviously, Jimmy did as well, and I could just feel the pain. I could feel the
How do you spell that?
Yeah. But that's the best adjective to describe that.
Well, that's because the FCC fines you for what you want to say. No, I mean, it was one of those plays where you know what he was trying to do, but obviously, you know, just one of those where you had a mental misfire. You just can't do that. You can't put the ball up in the air where, you know, there's two defenders around. I think if you go to both the interceptions, the other one was to Obanaya, and he was pretty well covered down the field. And, you know, running backs that far down the field, you know, struggle with catching passes. Plus, there was a safety coming over. So, you know, a couple of bad choices. But overall, in the first half, he played pretty darn good. That last drive to get the 3 points was well done. But the second half was a different story.
You know, you called it a moment of truth, Vic. I thought there were several moments of truth, though. I thought especially early on, with, you know, coming out in the second half with the ball up 17-7 with a chance to really, you know, not only take some time off the clock but continue what was a dominant first half by that Browns offensive line. They played tremendously for the first 30 minutes. But I thought a real moment of truth was that 39-yard run by Reggie Bush, where you just kind of let the Lions back in the game there. It came after a scramble by Matt Stafford, who stood up and spiked the ball and got called for a delay of game. But then
who doesn't scramble
made a nice play there. But then, you know, there were some other moments of truth as well. And in the, you know, the play that goes against the Browns, the Greg Little catch down the sideline, which just seemed to be so deflating to everyone. Yeah. And I mean, you don't want to put all your hopes on one play like that, but that was a huge throw by Whedon, and for that not to go their way. And, you know, that just didn't happen in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at this thing, and again, we're singling out a defining moment, and that interception was that. But at the same time, the overall drop of play on both sides of the ball was stunning.
In the
second half.
Yeah, I asked Coach Chudzinski about that today. I thought the bigger issue to me is, okay, yeah, that was a terrible play, inexcusable. You don't want to see that at any level. But how you go from 17-7 to 24-17, I think, is more alarming. You can't get their offense off the field. The Lions didn't punt in the second half yesterday. Beyond that, we got nothing out of the special teams yesterday. So I thought there were a lot of other things to talk about than just the boneheaded play.
Yeah, the third down conversions were they flip-flopped. In the first half, they were very good. Second half, they were terrible, and the Browns were in regards to converting. By the same token, they couldn't get the Lions off the field.
This team now in the three losses has lost 55-3 in the second half combined.
That's an alarming number, isn't it?
What does that say to you? What can be done about this?
Well, I mean, obviously something's got to be done, but I would have to think that, you know, you've got to add on. I mean, you just can't sit there, you know, with a lead. I mean, we've had the lead in every game so far at halftime, and it's discouraging that, you know, you don't add on to it, or you don't keep them out of the end zone. I mean, the second half, it's kind of a mystery. What happened? I mean, it was just like night and day, the difference of the two. And the what we saw in the second half was only outdone by what the officiating was during the course of the whole game.
Yeah, well, and that is a whole topic we could also get into. But we're not I know none of us is blaming officials for this loss. But Doug, I want to go back to this point because we had a caller bring this point up, and I thought you'd be great to deal with this in terms of a reality check on what quote halftime adjustments are all about, because we've all lived and heard that term over and over again like there's some magic to it. Give us the reality of what a halftime locker room is all about, where people seem to think that those 12 minutes are suddenly like 24 or a half an hour, and you got all this time to work things out, break down. So we'll fix this and this, and it's all calmly. Tell us the reality of it.
Really, there's not a lot that goes on. I mean, you go in, you know, guys that might have to go to the bathroom. By the time you come out, the coaches meet kind of by themselves, or the way it used to be, and then you know they come and say, hey, we're going to try to run this and this and this. Well, which were plays that you've practiced during the week. If you have a real veteran team, you might be able to draw something up that you haven't really had any reps on. But there's not a lot of adjustments. I mean, you might have done something in the first half to set up something for the second half. That's the only thing. But that's not an adjustment. That's the guys in the booth sitting there saying, okay, you know, this is our game plan. We wanted to show them this to think that we're going to try to be doing this, and then we're going to come back with, you know, this. And, you know, but as far as adjustments, no, you don't change blocking assignments. You might say, okay, we'll give a little more help to somebody. There's not a lot done. I mean, it's just, there's be too much.
But that would be something you would do, though, Doug, right? When the units come off the field and you're on the sideline and you can discuss what maybe isn't going right in the second half.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and what you do is they have the photographs, and they sit there and they look at the photographs of the overheads to see where the alignments are. And, you know, okay, you know, if he's doing this, then this is what they did off of that. So, you know, then we've got to, you know, try to make sure it doesn't happen to us again. But there's not a lot of adjustments, if any, that you know normally happen in the second half.
I thought the one adjustment that should have been done, sorry to interrupt, guys, one adjustment I thought that should have taken place at some point in the second half was to get somebody else on Reggie Bush. I mean, they never switched over to maybe having a smaller defensive back or anybody. And he was just manhandling anybody that was covering him, and it was usually a linebacker.
It was Craig Robertson who had a tough day in pass coverage, and this one was exposed, and I think your point is good. You almost have to treat him at times like a slot receiver and get somebody on him who can run stride for stride. And we talked before going in this game, okay, Calvin Johnson, if he plays, not going to be 100%. Clearly, he wasn't. 3 catches, 25 yards, had some drops, etc. They did try to incorporate him, but they didn't. I would say this. How surprised, and what does it say that Chris Durham had 8 catches for 83 yards, 40, a 3 for 34, all 3 touchdowns, by the way. These are guys that are not supposed to be beating the Cleveland Browns, and along with Reggie Bush, who had 135 total yards, they did just that.
Well, they should all be, except for Reggie Bush, playing power forward for the Pistons. I mean, they're 6'7",
big boys,
6'6".
Yeah.
I mean, Durham came into the game with, I think, 8 catches on the year.
Yes.
And he matched double that total.
Down. Yeah.
And the Poirier, I mean, he was a guy, though, if you looked at his totals at UCLA, he caught 20 touchdown passes there. So, you know, he was a weapon, but he was an undrafted guy. He just got, you know, good hands and great size.
7 catches this year, 5 for touchdowns.
Yeah, 9 targets, 5 touchdowns.
That's after
a
fantasy
team.
Right,
oh, yeah, I know. It's crazy. And he can dance a little bit, too, but I didn't want to see that. We also talked about somebody stepping up other than Josh Gordon and making a play in this passing game. And Cameron, yes, he had the 33-yarder late in the game. But other than that, when Chris Obanaya is getting 12 targets and is your leading target getter on the team, Devon Bess, 21 yards. Greg Little, 12 yards. Somebody needs to help Gordon, because Gordon right now seems to be the only person who can get more than 10 yards down the field and actually make a play.
And I thought it would be Jordan Cameron yesterday, and we really didn't see him get really involved
until
it was
drive.
Way
it
too
was
late. Yeah. So, but I did think there were some spots there early on where it didn't seem like Cameron and Whedon were on the same page in a couple of those routes. It seemed like Whedon was holding on to the ball a little bit, waiting for Cameron to kind of come out of a break. There was the one play where he actually out-wrestled the cornerback
for the ball,
but that play was there earlier, but Cameron hadn't turned his shoulders, and Whedon was waiting for him and maybe a little bit locked in there. The other thing, you know, we've been waiting for Travis Benjamin to be more involved, but it seems like when they've used him offensively, you know what's coming. And while the Lions didn't stop that end of round, which was a really nice play, the other time he was in the game, they tried a home run ball to him, and it just didn't connect.
You know, we talk about things. By the way, this is the round table that we've assembled here. Doug Deacon, Tom Withers, and it's brought to you by Sam and Dave's in downtown Rocky River, celebrating the 20th annual Main Event Lobster Celebration. We've talked about handling success or being mature enough as a team collectively to do this, to handle success. Well, the stat, again, that screams is the six games where this team's been ahead, and it doesn't seem consistent with a 3-3 record. So success isn't just a winning record or going into this game with a three-game, going into this Detroit game with a three-game winning streak. It is at halftime that pause that says you're ahead and you're doing, you know, you're doing the right things to get ahead, and then deciding for whatever reason that maybe, okay, we've done enough. And I just wonder if this is the next evolution of how your team has to be put together. If the problem is bigger than just X's and O's and strategy, that this is maybe about your comprising, yeah, your makeup, your chemistry.
I see where you're going.
You know what I'm saying?
It's an experience thing, yeah.
Do they have guys who just don't get it yet?
I think that's part of it, Vic, and I think that's what you have to go through during the course of a season. It's these ups and downs. It's this leveling off. I mean, I dealt with it with the Indians this year, you know, a team that would streak in both directions at the drop of a hat, and I think that may be some of the growing pains that you have with a very young team. So, and I was looking for Doug at halftime because, to me, that offensive line played about as well as
it
you
did.
Could yeah. possibly yeah, play in that first half, and it seemed to be nothing
guys.
More than man-on-man, you know, I'm going to win this battle type of blocking. And they just seemed to me, they got away from that so fast, and I would have to think how frustrating it must be for a coaching staff to come out of the second half where you talk at halftime about, hey, let's keep it clean and do the things we're doing, and you have a false start before you even snap the ball to begin the third quarter, and it just seemed like it went downhill from there.
And they would have had a first down without that false start on that particular drive, which would have gotten some momentum, and you did. You talked about the line. Only two times was Brandon Whedon sacked. He'd been sacked five times. He got the ball out in under 3 seconds for the first time in any one of his starts this year, and yet some of the things that we thought would be the biggest issues turned out to not be, other than the critical mistakes and then having guys that shouldn't be able to beat this defense, which has now given up 24 more points in three of the last four games against not really the best offenses in the league.
Well, it looked like in the first half they tried to beat the offensive line man on man, and they weren't having any success. In the second half, they went to more three-man stunts. A lot of times they had that Willie Young kicking down inside right before the snap. It's one of those where I think, with a real veteran team or veteran quarterback, they were giving you the edge in the running game if you could have checked off to it once he, aligned himself down there.
But I don't think we have anybody who can get to the edge in the running game, unfortunately.
That's a problem, too. But, I mean, the other thing is, we've got to get the quarterback to process the information quickly.
Yep.
Because I think that's the problem. You got to see what's there and take advantage of it.
Yeah, and it was interesting that the Lions ran more of a short, controlled passing game earlier. They did mostly throughout the game, but especially in the first half, it seemed like they were so worried about their inability to block the Browns in that pass rush that they were out of sync. If you notice the way they were throwing the ball, that was not a passing game that they were comfortable with. They do like to attack deeper. They do like to stretch the field a little more, and they weren't able to do that, and it had them off rhythm. I think once they realized, and you mentioned some of the things that they were doing with their offensive line as well, because their pass protection suddenly got really good. And part of me says, well, did the Browns just stop bringing the heat in ways that they should have? I mean, they were playing some heavy risk-reward stuff when they left Calvin Johnson uncovered at one point and sent Joe Hayden on a blitz, and Calvin drops the ball.
Right. Yeah.
So that's effectively Calvin Johnson normally catches that pass. So the risk-reward could have blown up in their face. But I'm just wondering why, for the Lions' sake, why sticking with what they were doing and then maybe even expanding and becoming more aggressive worked for them, whereas from the Browns' standpoint, it quit because it was they were living in parallel worlds.
I felt that the screen pass to Bush for the 18-yard touchdown that was such the perfect call.
Great play.
It kind of backed the dogs off a little bit. I felt after that they were a little gun-shy because
maybe that's
it was
turning
such
point.
The perfect yeah. call, right at the right time, 9 minutes in the third quarter, and it was one of those where he said, in a chess game, they made the right chess move right there. Checkmate you right there. And I think that may have had a psychological effect on the Browns going forward, because that was just such a perfect call at a time when the Browns had an opportunity again to maybe try to get off the field, and then it was quick touchdown and boom, right, back in the game.
Talking to one of the defensive players, though, they were ready for that play. They'd seen it on tape, and they knew it was coming. It just caught them at the right time. And, you know, it's one of those, you know, as I saw it, I still asked somebody if was that offensive line across the field when they threw the ball, because it did appear that way.
But,
you know, that's one of those things. You still have to make plays.
All right, where do they go from here? We know where they go on the schedule. Yeah, Green Bay and Kansas City, back-to-back, tough games. Tough. So are you seeing a team, Tom, that is ready to regroup or is shell-shocked or what? Because this quarterback discussion
is
it's now a dilemma, and it's only intensifying.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to see that Chudzinski decided not to toss, pardon the pun, Brandon Weeden to the side today. You know, I think he's still your best chance to win going forward. Now, Jason Campbell, you know, we saw play pretty well in the exhibition season. But I think sticking and staying with the course right now is the smart thing to do with this team. I'm going to use the Indians again as an example. When things couldn't look worse during the season, Terry Francona said, I'm going to stick with the guys that I've got. We're going to win. We're going to fix the problems that we have. That's the formula that I know to win. And I think Rob Chudzinski's taking a very similar tack.
Yeah, I think, you know, what he was saying today, you know, what Brandon did on the one throw was one play. I mean, there was a lot of other plays in the game. And, you know, coaches, you hear about coaches losing the locker room. You don't want the quarterback to lose the huddle. And if you point the finger at the quarterback and say he's the only guy, well, everybody else had bad plays. I mean, guys jumped off sides. You know, there was some other things that happened that you shouldn't have happened. And to point the finger at one guy, That's not the right way to do it.
No, and again, I said this earlier, when that day comes, or if that day comes, maybe some would say when, that you decide that you are now going to replace Brandon Weeden with Jason Campbell or whomever, if quarterback X ends up on this team, which I'm not expecting, but that happens, it's over for Weeden as a Cleveland Brown. You're making a bigger statement that this is not a temporary move. Mm-hmm. This has got to be done with a sense of permanence to it, because that's the only way it's going to be perceived inside and outside this organization. All right, guys, we will assemble later in the week to talk about that Green Bay game. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Doug Deacon, PNC Bank, Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Tom Withers, the Associated Press. The Roundtable brought to you by Sam and Dave's in downtown Rocky River, celebrating the 20th annual Main Event Lobster Celebration. And check out the delicious details at salmondaves.com. That's salmon, like the fish, and Dave's, like Dave Logan. Check it out here. And we've got more coming up for you. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Rob Chudzinski, head coach of the Browns, will be joining us shortly on ESPN 850 WKNR.